On this episode of Big Boys Don't Cry, we discuss two films, Bram Stoker's Dracula from 1992 and Sightseers from 2012. You don't have to have seen the films to enjoy the podcast, but if you do proceed and listen without having seen them, just be aware that elements of the plot might be discussed and they might be spoiled for you. Enjoy. There ought to be a law, get the sheriff on the phone. Lord have mercy, how she even get them bridges on? That honky tonk, the donkey donk.
Ooh. It's a spooky time.
Can you see the dog?
I see a doggo.
He's we've got a special guest this week, but he don't say much.
There is a livid cat staring at me at the moment because up until a few moments ago, she was sitting in this seat and was furious when she was moved.
You had to move. You had to move her.
I did.
Oh, there she is.
I had to move her. There she is, look. She's absolutely furious. But how are you? It has been a long time since we...
It has. A lot of stuff has happened. But we're looking after my parents-in-law's dog. So he's lovely, but you kind of need to be around him all the time. So, like, he's a rescue and I think he was abandoned. So he's got... When you're around, you kind of have to be in the same room as him. So hence, he's just sitting here while we're recording and he might join in, he might not. He hasn't seen either of the films we're going to talk about, not be much use either. But
might not have much input.
But yeah, it's been like hard work looking after him and the baby, but he's great. It's actually really nice to have that kind of part of your routine, going out and walking him stuff. It's been a nice, peaceful thing to have.
Oh, defo. He's such a nice dog as well, having met him.
Yeah, he's very docile.
An absolute dude.
You know, he really lies down like an old person. Is great.
And that's what you want from an animal.
Yeah, of course. But yeah, so much has happened in the world since we last spoke. We have a Brexit deal, supposedly.
It's crap, supposedly.
I haven't even seen it. But it's like I'm trying to think of a film that you know is bad and you don't need to see it to know that it's bad for comparison, but I'm so tired that I can't think of anything.
I hear that as part of the deal, Donald Tusk comes up to every person in the UK and farts in their face.
Yep.
That was part of the EU's term.
He's a very flatulent man.
You know what? We'll take out the backstop and we'll put in a much worse border policy that's more permanent just to annoy everybody in Ireland.
More permanent and that contradicts the Good Friday Agreement.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, that's what you've got to do, right? That's what all the cool kids are doing.
Yeah,
these days. But by putting that in, then yeah, unfortunately we now all do have to be farted at by members of the EU.
Yep. It'll either be Donald Tusk or it'll be Niles from Frasier playing Donald Tusk, just because he looks just like him.
Yeah, definitely.
The actor whose name
if he's not
I can't
available,
remember.
If he's got more important things to do, then we get Niles in.
Yep. And then maybe it just becomes an episode of Frasier, and then it reveals that it was all a big joke.
I mean, that is the definition of Brexit, isn't it?
An episode
big fucking
of
joke. So we've got two movies to get through.
We do. So we thought because we missed last week because I was indisposed, busy dealing with some family stuff, that we'd talk about both of the films that we planned to do over the last 2 weeks, which is a very good idea.
And they're pretty different.
I don't know what you mean.
I think
they're both horror films. And
the only through road I can see, apart from the fact that they're both horror themed, is that they're both pretty to look at, but pretty to look at in very different ways.
Yes, again in very very different ways.
So let's get cracking. And shall we start with Dracula?
Yep, Dracula.
So this is 1992's Bram Stoker's Dracula. Directed by Francis Ford Coppola, which is, I think it's one of my favourite Halloween movies to watch. I always make sure I watch it.
Yeah. When did you first see it? Because I'd never seen it before.
So I first saw it when I was young, which is probably not much of a surprise to you.
Whenever I ask you that question, that's always the answer.
when did you see this probably quite disturbing for a child to see film, Rob? Oh, when I was two. I saw it when I was quite young. I don't even remember what age, but I was pretty young. I saw this and the Kenneth Branagh Frankenstein, both at a relatively young age, and both of which I still really love to this day. But there's something special about Dracula. And I suppose it's the fact that it's so unashamedly gothic and so unashamedly over the top in that gothic horror way that a lot of films shy away from these days. It takes a lot of risks, and it is, you know, not deliberately corny, but it likes to be dramatic. And it's kind of a trait that I think has kind of disappeared in horror movies, is that being overly emotional and ambitious and fantastical.
Yeah, definitely. Or they do that too much, obviously, and then they end up taking themselves way too seriously, which I think a lot of the horror films that are coming out now, not that I'm an expert in it in any way, as you know, because I don't regularly go and see horror films, but I feel like a lot of them are very po-faced and take themselves too seriously, when actually they need to lighten up a bit, or just, you know, go full on with the drama and have everyone really, really hilariously overacting.
And overacting is the word here, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, everyone talks about Keanu Reeves's performance, but he's not overacting so much as actually underacting, maybe. I don't know. You never quite know what's going on with him, do you?
Yeah, I feel, I don't know. There's two very strange casting decisions made in this movie. Which were Winona Ryder as Mina and Keanu Reeves as Jonathan Harker. And I mean, I love this film and I love them both, but it was a very poor casting choice, particularly when you consider how good the rest of the cast is. Like, even with that, because everybody else kind of overacts to a perfect level, I think. Like, Gary Oldman's Dracula is one of my favorite horror movie villain performances. He's amazing in this.
With his heart-shaped hair
and his weird muscle armor suit. The costumes of this film are amongst my favorite I've seen in cinema. I really love all of the costume design here. And the costume designer of this went on to do a series of movies. I can't remember the name of the person who did it now. But she went on to do, some incredibly visually striking films, and this was kind of just a taster of what she's capable of, really.
That's really cool. It's really important to recognize, you know, all everyone who contributes to a production, especially something like this, where, as you say, the costumes are really elaborate in the best possible way. The production design, I think, is really good. All of that stuff is really spot on here. So the things that make it most interesting are the performances and just the overall tone of it. Whereas you say, it's really, really overblown, but you feel like it's still not taking itself too seriously because you've got Keanu Reeves. And then you've got Anthony Hopkins sort of jokingly arsing around as well. I think he was actually the worst offender in terms of hilarious overacting. He really made me laugh, and I don't really know why.
I think that's definitely true. And it's a movie that revels in its absurdity, and it revels in the drama. And I think that's why it's so captivating to watch. So the costumes were by Eiko Ishioka, who also did The Cell, which is a really great, clever trash movie, I suppose is the best way to describe it. So Jennifer Lopez is this psychologist, social worker, who has this weird technology that allows her to go into the subconscious of comatose people and get sent into the subconscious of a serial killer to find out where his last victim is, who's not dead yet. And it's a really, like, it's a ridiculous story, but it's a great film to watch, and a huge part of that is the cinematography and the costume design. And she also did Mirror Mirror, the Snow White film.
Now that's the film I needed when I was looking earlier. I was trying to think of a film that I know is bad, and I don't need to see it to know it's bad.
And she did Immortals as well, The Fool, which is an incredible movie, and worked with Cirque du Soleil and things like that. Like, she's a really brilliant costume designer. But this is like, I really love the design of this movie. And I think that gothic tinge to it, it matches up so well with a lot of actors who are equally known for their brilliant stage performances as well. So, you know, you've got like Richard E. Grant here as well.
I know. Our main man, Cary Elwes. I did not know he was in this. I love him. He's brilliant. He's really stupid in this.
And maybe the best choice of casting ever, Tom Waits as Renfield.
Yeah. I initially thought it was Jim Jarmusch when I saw him with that mad hair. But yeah, he's brilliant.
You know a movie's good when Tom Waits turns up in it. I don't think I've seen a movie with him in that isn't amazing.
He's really got presence. But the thing is, he can act as well. It's not all just, oh, Tom Waits is in it doing his Tom Waits thing. He actually does put in a really good performance of someone being possessed and haunted and having this demonic master. It actually is really well done.
Yeah, he is amazing in this. And so all of these people and all of these clashing... all of these clashing personalities and these clashing acting styles, like, I don't know, you don't think of Anthony Hopkins and Richard E. Grant and Cary Elwes as acting in a similar manner, really, do you?
No.
But they all come together into this marvelous soup of blood. And it's such a incredible movie to watch when they're all together. But then you do get this bizarre notion of Keanu Reeves doing a not particularly good English accent.
And Winona Ryder doing an English accent that's probably worse.
Yeah, just about worse. And I kind of love the fact that they're in it, and I kind of love the fact that they're in over their heads a little bit. Because I was thinking, like, you know, they could have hired someone like Kenneth Branagh, or thinking of other people who were young British actors at this time. You know, this was the early 90s. Timothy Dalton probably still would have been good enough, like young enough to play the role. Or
Damien Hirst.
Damien Hirst would have been a good shout.
Oh, no, sorry. That's some young British artists.
No, who am I thinking of? Damien Lewis.
Damien Lewis.
Damien Lewis. Yeah. Or Pierce Brosnan, you know, Brosnan would have
been. Can you imagine Bronholm's Dracula?
He could have been, you know, he could have been a really good choice for Jonathan Harker here, but
He could also have been a really good Dracula as well.
He also could have been a good Dracula.
In fact, have you seen a picture of Pierce Brosnan recently?
I saw a movie with him in recently.
Really? What was that?
I can't remember the name of it, but he was some kind of magical drug dealer who created this evil drug that turned everyone crazy.
I remember hearing about this film. Sounds really interesting. was it good or was it stupid?
It was really stupid, but it was worth watching.
But he's deliberately grown like a huge mustache and beard when he's offset now, and it's grey, and he looks like an old king, and it's great.
Yeah.
So him now, actually, if they remade this now, he'd make a good Dracula.
He would make an excellent Dracula. But I was thinking, you know, do I really want to replace Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder in this movie? And I don't think I do, because I think the strangeness of them being in this movie makes it all the more enjoyable. And I don't know, I think I kind of love them here.
And they don't necessarily do a bad job of portraying a young couple in love for parts of the film. And that is actually ultimately faithful to the novel as well.
Yeah.
Of them as kind of young people trying to make their way in the world, trying to forge their careers. He's trying to work so that he can marry her and stuff. And the context of all of that, that's not lost here in their performances.
No, it's definitely not. And I think they're very much maligned for their performances in this movie. And I wouldn't say they're as bad as people think they are either. And in part, that's because there's this overall strangeness, this fantastical feel to the movie that just makes it something a little bit alien. And part of that's the direction. So, you know, Francis Ford Coppola is one of the greats.
Yeah.
And this is a very...
Probably best known for being Nicolas Cage's uncle.
Of course he's best known for that. but you know, he, in terms of his greatest movies, he's got the Godfather trilogy, which is, you know, that's fine.
I've never seen it. Adam tried to show me the Godfather once and I fell asleep, but that was because we started watching it at midnight.
Yeah. That's
it probably, wasn't because I was bored.
That's probably not the best time to watch it. He did The Conversation as well, which is a great movie. And of course Apocalypse Now, which is one of my all-time favorite movies. I really think that's a fantastic,
I don't think I've ever seen that either.
It's
based on Heart of Darkness, isn't it?
Yeah,
Heart of Darkness. A book I never got on with, but I think I tried to read it once when I was 14, found it really boring, and then just left it.
There's no hearts in this. There's no darkness in this.
Yeah,
mis-sold.
It was just a man on a boat going down a river, and I was like, I'm bored already.
It's like Moby Dick, but without a whale. Boring. Yeah,
no one was called Ahab or Queequeg.
But yeah, I really like Apocalypse Now. I think it's a wonderful film. But this is his version of Dracula stands alone from the rest of his works, I think. There's nothing else he's done quite feels like it. And interestingly, I was reading the other day that he's coming back to making movies again. So he's sort of made a few more movies in the 90s and into the 2000s that didn't do particularly well. And then he just decided, fuck it, I'm going to go off and do something weird, which he did. And it was some kind of strange art piece cinematography thing.
Sounds like he was working with Shia LaBeouf.
Where actually it started out as a movie, but then it turned into a monthly subscription service for muffins.
That sounds like the kind of ruse that I would pull.
That's from what's that? That's BoJack Horseman, isn't it? It's something that Todd yeah. comes up with. But he's announced that he's coming back to direct a passion project of his that he's never been able to get off the ground called Megalopolis.
I'm listening.
And it's like a sci-fi movie about this architect who, after this huge disaster, decides to rebuild New York City from the ground up, with lots of weird futuristic shit. And it sounds like a real, I don't know, I love it when directors get to do something strange like that.
That's really cool.
He's ancient now, Francis Ford Coppola.
I was going to say, he must be, what, 90?
So I don't think he's 90 yet, but hold on, let's do a quick bit of maths. He must be nearly 90. I think he was born in like 1940.
Yeah, you know the Coppola sequence. It's like the Fibonacci sequence.
Yeah, exactly. I think he must be about 80, late 80s. I don't think he's quite 90 yet, but he's getting on in years. Cool. And he's coming back to make this bizarre, beautiful sci-fi movie, which I really hope gets off the ground this time. It would be fascinating.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
But I do love it when directors who are obviously really good at, you know, making film as a whole, because, you know, you can be a really, really great director of particular types or genres of films or films with certain types of content, but that doesn't mean you can make any film. But when directors who are obviously very skilled turn their talents to another genre, and especially something like horror, I love that. And I always love how ambitious it is and how much they bring to the table. And yeah, even if, you know, you do end up with Keanu Reeves, there's still so much vision there and so much grandeur. And that makes it a really enjoyable film to watch.
Yeah. And what I really love was that, you know, parts of this movie are very forward thinking in their cinematography and in their design. And you can see elements here in films like Crimson Peak, for instance. You know, there's a clear through road from this to Crimson Peak.
That's a great film.
But also, there's elements that are really classic and old-fashioned. When Dracula's eyes appear in the clouds in the sky, it's this very clear callback to like the 1960s French cinema, which really used that kind of design a lot more. So it's a movie that understands its roots, and it understands how to feel timeless, how to pull upon the classics of cinema, as well as looking towards what the future might hold. And I think that was very clever, because obviously Dracula's roots in cinema are very long running. You know, they run deep. You know, you've got Nosferatu, one of the most like prominent examples of early cinema. And so I think it was very clever of them to actually make this film feel like it lasts through ages, just in terms of the way it looks and the way it feels.
Yeah, and Bela Lugosi, obviously.
Yeah. and then, yeah, you've got Christopher Lee. You've got, you know, it's Dracula is a permanent fixture in on the silver screen.
Yeah, for sure. It's amazing, really, when you think about it, how all of those kind of things have endured so much. Characters like Dracula and Frankenstein and whatever, how they've become such a mainstay of horror. But when there is a new version, it generally tends to be worth seeing.
It's true. It's true. I it's going to be interesting to see where they go with it, because Warner Brothers were trying to create something called the Dark Universe, where they were trying to do like a monster movie cinematic universe akin to the Marvel, the MCU, or the DC CU.
Twilight already had vampires and wolf boys. You can't have them both in the same universe again. That's just stealing.
You've got Underworld, you've got Twilight, you can't have a third one. And so the first movie of this was Tom Cruise's The Mummy, which did so badly that it killed the entire idea. Unfortunately, by the time The Mummy came out, they'd already announced that they were going to be doing other films. So Johnny Depp was going to be the Invisible Man, I think. And then
maybe he should do that more often.
And then Russell Crowe was going to be Dr. Jekyll. And he appeared in The Mummy as Dr. Jekyll, which is The Mummy's a fine movie. It's nothing special. It doesn't have the charm of the 90s and early 2000s movies.
Which I have seen The Mummy from the 90s.
Which is awesome. And that holds up super well.
Now, where does the Scorpion King with Dwayne The Rock Johnson fit into that?
So he was the villain of the second...
Because I went to see that he was the cinema.
He was the villain of the second Mummy movie, who then got a prequel where he was the hero.
That's right.
And that's a real piece of shit.
Yeah. We should talk about that sometime.
We definitely should. But interestingly enough, straight after the failure of the Dark Universe, Blumhouse, who do a lot of great horror movies, so they did The Conjuring, they do Insidious,
The Nun,
they really have almost, you know, more than any other production company, they've made horror popular in cinemas again through some very clever releases, and all made on a very modest budget. And they've actually been given the opportunity to make The Invisible Man, but as a traditional horror movie. So that's going to be a remake of, again, one of these very classic horror stories, which will be interesting to see how they do. And if that's successful, I wonder if we'll see them taking on more of these. And I'd love for them to do a really creepy mummy movie. I think, you know, people go into a pyramid, then a curse gets unleashed and they get chased by an undead Egyptian sorcerer. That's a fun time for everybody.
What more
it?
Could you want? He's covered in toilet roll.
Yeah, exactly. It's a nice cheap movie as well.
There's nothing scarier than cheap toilet roll. You know, I bet the mummies, what they're covered in is the scratchiest stuff. You know, when you stay in like an Ibis budget hotel or something, and it's that really scratchy stuff that's basically just like printer paper.
The stuff that offices get in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting to see what that does, but I don't know. I think a movie like Dracula, that needs that grandiose attitude, doesn't it?
Yeah. Because Dracula is a grandiose figure himself.
Precisely. And so I think this movie really succeeds because it manages to tap into what makes Dracula as a story great, because it's a scary story. It's still a scary book. I don't know if you've ever read Dracula.
Yeah. Didn't we study it on our degree?
I didn't, but maybe you did it as maybe one of the I modules did. That I didn't do. But there's still moments of it, all these years later, that are still very scary. So reading through the journals of the ship captain of the vessel that's taking Dracula's coffin, whose crew is slowly disappearing over the course of the journey, that's still a very harrowing read. There's these moments within the novel which still work incredibly well, which can't be said for every piece of literature from that era. And so it's still got something special about it all these years later. And very rarely does a movie adaptation fail. The big shout out to Dracula Untold. I don't know if you've ever seen Dracula Untold.
No, what is Dracula Untold?
Dracula Untold is the prequel story to Dracula, where he's a good guy that gets betrayed and then has to turn to the power of being a vampire to get revenge.
Yeah. Does that match up with the title, the opening sequence of Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula, where you see him like centuries before as a sexy young knight man, and then he comes back and he finds that they killed his wife, and then he renounces God and then becomes a vampire?
Yeah, so imagine that, but stretched over 2 hours with shit CGI.
Right.
it's a bad movie. And
when was it made?
So this was back in 2014. Our boy Luke Evans is Dracula.
No way.
It's worth watching. It's really good fun, but it's a bad movie.
I'd watch it if he's in it.
It's got Luke Evans. It's got Dominic Cooper. It's got Charles Dance.
Oh, Charles Dance, the Seagull Man himself.
It's really awesome, but it's not good, but it is enjoyable to watch.
Charles Dance, has a supporting role in most things.
Yeah, I love Charles Dance.
You can find him usually in the background somewhere.
Yeah, and I'm a Charles Dance hipster because lots of people love him now because he was in Game of Thrones. But I'm like, motherfuckers, you weren't around for classic Charles Dance fun.
You weren't there for Dracula Untold.
You weren't there for Alien 3. He's in Alien 3 and he's amazing.
Really?
Have you ever seen Alien 3?
No, I think I've only seen the first one, but that is like one of the greatest films ever made.
Yeah, I love Alien. I kind of love all of the Alien movies, even the bad ones, and the vast majority of them are bad films, but they all do something different, and the fact that they all do something different is really good fun. So even when they're bizarre and not very good, there's still something special about all of them.
No, I think Charles Dance's most significant role is playing a snooty MP in Ali G in the House, 2002.
Of course, that is the highlight of everybody's career.
You know what? I think about a year or two ago, I was in a hotel room flicking channels and that movie came on. It actually wasn't that bad.
I imagine it's good fun.
Yeah. Have you never seen it?
I don't think I have, actually, no. I remember watching the Ali G series when it was on, but I don't think I ever watched the movie.
Yeah, it's a classic comedian becomes prime minister plot, but it's funny.
That old chestnut.
Yeah. But yeah, if you watch your old clips from Ali G, it actually holds up surprisingly well.
Yeah, it does. It still works really well. It's one of those comedies that it's still fresh and it's still funny all these years later. I suppose a bit like Brass Eye, you can get a lot of success out of making fun of the establishment without them realizing that you're doing so.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, Brass Eye is a much smarter show.
That thing with cake and yeah. Whatever. Yeah.
the anti-drug movement called Fucked and Bombed is still one of the things where I just laugh thinking about it.
And he got an MP to go on camera and go, help Fucked and Bombed.
Yeah. which is amazing.
His new film's supposed to be quite good.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. Because, I don't know, he's one of those people where he knows how to toe the line remarkably well between like satire and pushing it too far.
He's always on the borderline, isn't he?
Like Four Lions is an understandably controversial movie, but it's also one of the funniest movies ever made.
Yeah, but I think Chris Morris, ultimately, he knows how to make people laugh. He knows how to make things ridiculous, and that's the key to it, isn't it? Rather than making things schlocky or shocking just for the sake of shocking, he knows how to actually make things amusing and funny.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Which is a rare trait, isn't it, being able to toe the line between the two.
Yeah. So he's had a great career as well, you know, go from stuff like Brass Eye that was so good to then doing real hit films now like Four Lions and such.
And what's great is that he also picks his projects well. Like, he doesn't just do something for the sake of it. You know, it could have been so easy for him to do another series of Brass Eye, like however many years later, and just phone it in. But yeah. you kind of know with him that when he decides to do something, he does it for a reason. And that's, you know, it's a rare quality in sort of film media.
It is, actually. But going back to this week's film, I feel like Francis Ford Coppola made his Dracula for a reason. You know, he got the feeling he did have something to say by saying, hey, I'm this kind of filmmaker. I can make this kind of film. I can tell a classic story and a horror story and make it scary and put my own touch on it. Here you go.
Yeah, and he does. And I think it's one of the best vampire movies in cinematic history. You know, it's up there with... have you ever seen Interview with the Vampire?
Yes,
which is a great movie.
That is very good. Not as good as Twilight, Neil Jordan, obviously, but...
Oh, obviously not. But director Neil Jordan, he came back in 2012 to do another vampire movie called Byzantium, which I don't know if you've seen.
Oh, I know, I haven't heard of that.
It stars Saoirse Ronan and Gemma Arterton as these two vampires. And again, it kind of, much like Interview with the Vampire, it tells a story set in the modern day for part of it, but then it shows their lives throughout time. And I won't spoil it, but it's got one of the most interesting ways of showing someone being turned into a vampire. And it's not your old, I'm going to suck your blood kind of thing. It's done in a much more interesting and sort of unnerving way that really works well. So I recommend, in fact, anybody who likes vampire movies, go and watch Byzantium. It's a cool film. It does things in a lot more subtle a way than a lot of vampires movies do as well. So that's a good one. I think this Dracula is one of the classics. I really love it.
Yeah, it's a good horror film, and it's a very good one for this sort of mid horror month period, because it's classic, actually, isn't it? It ticks all the boxes. You know what you're going to get, but there's enough intrigue and enough fun stuff to keep you entertained. It's great.
For sure. And since we're a romance podcast, I like the fact that they really amp up the idea of it being a love triangle.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's hints of it in the book, but they really sort of turned it up for the film. And I think it works really well, actually.
Yeah, it does. And in the end, you still get the feeling that Mina is actually a bit confused about it. And there's bits where you feel like she is in love with Dracula and he's her prince and whatever. And he sort of visits her in her bed and there's all this stuff. Yeah, it gets surprisingly sexy between them. And yeah, not just in a vampire way.
No, and vampires are inherently sexy.
Yeah, obviously. What's hotter than fangs?
Exactly. I mean, as an aside, by the way, if you were going to turn into any classic monster, which one would you choose?
I still think I'd want to be a wolfman.
Yeah.
Because, vampires are cool, but wolfman is sort of big and powerful in a way that, you know, everyone sees a wolfman and they're like, there's a big, powerful guy. I'm not going to mess with him.
But at the same,
and I also like the idea of howling at the moon as well. I feel like it would be really cathartic to howl at the moon.
But at the same time, a lot of the time, wolf boys can't control what they're doing. We're not going to go down the Twilight route where they can control what they're doing. You know, so would you accept the possibility that you wouldn't be able to control yourself under the full moon, and you might go and
kind of like going on a bender?
Yeah, you might go punch up a Wetherspoons or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Just destroy the local pub.
Yeah, exactly.
Gnaw all the tables.
Because for me, I think this says a lot about me as a person, that I'd definitely be a vampire, and I don't think I've had much of a problem drinking people's blood to stay alive, because a lot of people are dickheads.
That's true.
So, I don't know. You'd be cool. You could play in a cool goth band and no one would think none the wiser.
Mm-hmm. That's like that Jim Jarmusch film that we watched last year, yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
Or
you'd be that vampire.
Or Queen of the Damned as well, in the trashy sequel to Interview with the Vampire, where he decides he wants to become a cool new metal musician.
I haven't seen that.
I'm not kidding. That is the plot. He becomes a cool new metal guy.
Metal as in N-U, new metal.
Yep. The soundtrack is done by Jonathan Davies from Korn.
Oh, right. Blimey.
And so when he's singing on stage, he's singing with his voice.
He's like... Ooh,
I'm a vampire.
He is a bit of a vampire, Jonathan Davies.
He could be a vampire.
I could see him sucking some blood.
Yeah, defo. I could see him, you know, flapping outside the window.
Yeah.
With some bagpipes under his arm. But yeah, I like the fact that they introduced that romantic element more. And it made Dracula more of a character and gave him more of a motivation beyond just being a creepy villain, which he is. And you know, there's some very disgusting and very scary scenes in this movie, but it's all wonderful to watch. And it's a good one. I like it.
It made me chuckle when he appears like as a sort of normal human guy in a weird grey suit and like tries to seduce her on the streets of London and she's not having it. Because yeah, he does just come across as a weird sort of Tommy Wiseau in John Lennon specs kind of pervert.
Which is what all men were like in the Victorian era.
This is true. They were all like milady.
Milady.
Yeah. Today's men's rights activists, they definitely probably think that like that version of Gary Oldman's Dracula is a god.
For sure, for sure.
Because he like basically kind of talks to her and negs her and winds her down. He's a pickup artist, basically.
He is. What is more of a pickup artist than turning up outside someone's window in the middle of the night?
Yeah, and then becoming a wolf and having sex with her friend.
That's the ultimate alpha male move, isn't it?
Yeah.
Conscious of time, we've got another movie to get onto.
Yes, we do.
So, do you want to rate now and do some trivia now?
Yeah. Let's do it that way, actually. Yeah, overall, I just have to say it's very, very good. If you haven't seen it, really, really worth seeing. Really, really good. Overblown, mildly hilarious, but still, yeah, an excellent vampire film.
Yeah, if you want a good old silly vampire movie that really loves its gothic horror roots, then this is a great one to watch.
Yeah, it comes from a good place.
Yeah.
And it's well executed.
Yeah, so get on it. If you've not seen it before, you're going to love it.
Yeah.
So a little bit of trivia. The wedding between Mina and Jonathan.
Oh, yeah, in a random chapel in Ukraine or wherever it was.
So it was a reshoot done in a Greek Orthodox church in LA, but the ceremony was done with a genuine Greek Orthodox minister. Which means that Winona Ryder and Keanu Reeves might actually be married under Greek Orthodox, which is something they discussed recently, actually. So they're not actually sure whether they're officially married.
That's brilliant.
That way, which is hilarious. Just a couple of other things. So the scream as Dracula stabs his sword into the cross at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Gary Oldman doing that. It's the lead singer of the punk band The Cramps.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
And then they dubbed it in, which I think is cool.
Did they take it from one of the songs or did he do it specially?
So I think he did it specially.
That's cool.
Which is cool.
I thought that was a good scene, actually. Good moment. Yeah. You're like, actually, that's how someone becomes like that. I get it now.
And finally... The casting of Keanu Reeves, Francis Ford Coppola has criticized it himself and said he did it because he needed a young hot star.
fair enough.
which fair enough.
Nothing wrong with that, though.
But I think there's something fun. I know that Keanu Reeves doesn't really like his work in it either. I think there's still something special about this movie, warts and all.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't change it.
So, shall we move on to talk about our second movie?
Yeah. Did you want to rate it?
Yes, yeah, so we rate it. So, how are we going to rate this? How many vampire wives do you have to stop from drinking Keanu Reeves' blood?
Yeah, it's like it goes to 20 minutes and suddenly he's there and then he's having dinner with Dracula, he's a bit angry and then suddenly he's captured by all the random sexy ghostly wives.
Yeah, all the vampire brides. Yeah. One of which is Monica Bellucci.
It is, yeah.
I
have got 14 of them.
Yeah, and I have 15. This movie is awesome and I really love watching it and I think more people should watch it.
Yep. And the romantic element is genuinely actually very interesting and not just tacked on as well. It fits it very elegantly into the Dracula story.
Yes, yeah. Which, yeah, it's awesome. It's good.
Very good.
So, next, let us go on to talk about our second movie.
A completely different film.
Which is very different.
They genuinely couldn't get much more different, even though both are technically horror films with an element of romance. Literally just like polar opposites.
Yep. So our second movie is Sightseers from 2012. Ben Wheatley's big breakout film, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like British caravanning equivalent of Natural Born Killers, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Where these two dysfunctional adults, they go off on a caravanning holiday, seeing various sites across Yorkshire and Cumbria, and start going on a murder spree together.
Yeah. And it really works because it's done in a very, very British way, but not in a way that's cliched. At a time when it's profoundly embarrassing to be British, this is a film that actually made me feel proud to be British. And it made me think that, you know, the very British humour of it and the way that the characters interact, it's almost like a Mike Lee film. And it made me feel good about being British for once.
Yeah, it's true. This movie could only be made by Brits, couldn't it?
Yeah.
it's incredibly dark and dry in its humor, but it's also very, very funny a lot of the time.
Yeah.
It's also very grisly. There's some scenes of quite horrible death in it.
Yeah, but I never felt it was gratuitous at any point, which is the line that these kind of films have to walk.
Yeah, it never overdoes it. And I think that's something that Ben Wheatley's really good at. I don't know if you've seen any of his other films.
I don't know if I have, actually. I know of him. I know his name. I know he's well respected. Done a few different things.
Yeah, because I really love him. So he started off with Ideal, I think is really sort of like the main thing that that brought him to light. So that was a TV series with Johnny Vegas.
Right.
This comedy series where he's a drug dealer. And it's a very sort of strange and off the wall, bizarre series. But then off the back of that, he did Kill List, which is a great little horror movie. Again, very low key, very dry, but that really captured this very strange tone, this very dark tone, and this kind of offbeat tone. But after that, he went on to do Sightseers, which kind of really blew up, and I think a lot of people really loved and connected with this movie.
I've heard nothing but good things about it, but I never got around to seeing it until we were watching it for this, and I'm glad that I did because I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's really good fun. So so we've got our two leads. We've got Chris, played by Steve Oram, and Tina, played by Alice Lowe. Alice Lowe, of course, from Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
Yeah, although she looks so different in this. It's really, I didn't realize it was her right away. And then I was like, oh, of course. Yep, right.
Which is a series I absolutely adore. I love Dark Place so much.
It has has a really big cult following, but genuinely is still underrated because it's such a great and very short show. They only did the one series, didn't they? Or are there two?
No, so they did the one series, and then they did Man to Man with Dean Lerner.
Oh, yeah.
The talk show with the producer of Dark Place. But Alice Lowe is great in this in a very different role.
And that was the first time I was aware of Matt Berry.
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah, who is wonderful. And I think maybe next year... Or just something for you to watch when you've got a spare 30 minutes here and there, Paddy, is have you watched What We Do in the Shadows?
No, again, heard nothing but good things about it.
Which is amazing. Both the film and the subsequent TV series are incredible, and Matt Berry's in the TV show. And it's so funny, like genuinely so funny. As somebody who loves vampires, I love their sort of comedic take on the whole thing.
He's great.
But yeah.
Did you ever see the series Snuffbox?
No, but I heard that was good.
It was good. It was a really odd sketch show with Matt Berry and Rich Fulcher that they wrote. It was really dark, really strange. But some of the sketches individually have made me just absolutely howl with laughter. I'll find a couple of them and send them to you. But yeah, he's just great. He's just got such a wacky sense of humor, but it always works, Matt Berry. I mean, but it follows on because... I think Alice Lowe was in a couple of scenes in that, and it seems like there's this nice sort of scene of British comedians who have been in a lot of stuff together over the years, all working together, and it's clearly a nice sort of family feel. Like I gather that Alice Lowe and Steve Oram, who wrote it, have been working together for a long time, and you can sort of tell that because it fits together nicely.
Yeah, there's this real, I don't know, that there's some people that just work together incredibly well, don't they? And it shows. It shows so well. And it feels so real as well. And you know, the locations that they visit, so they go from place to place on their little caravanning holiday. And the locations they visit are real tourist attractions, which is really neat. But I don't know. I feel like the moment that the first murder happens is really shocking, and it kind of changes the entire tone of the film instantly, where you're like, oh god, what kind of movie am I getting into?
Yeah, because up to that point it could just be one of those sort of observational comedy type things, British people caravanning. Yeah, as I said, you could compare it to Mike Lee. It could just be a film like that, and actually if that was the film they wanted to make, they probably could make it work. But yeah, they definitely dark, could. And you see him like smirking so that she can't see you after he's killed this guy. You're like, oh, okay, that's what he's like.
Yeah, and it's really funny because this movie does a really good job of on the whole, you don't feel that unhappy about the people who are murdered dying. So you've got rude man who litters, you've got smug writer in his fancy caravan.
Yeah, he's really annoying.
You've got Daily Mail reader who tells them to pick up their dog excrement.
Yeah, who is just a kind of picture-perfect caricature of someone who really, really cares about wildlife.
Yeah, who goes to care about wildlife so that they can sneer at poor people.
Yeah.
And then you've got trashy person who's getting married who makes out with random bloke. But then you do have I do feel incredibly sorry for their last victim though, who is this guy who's created he's such a great character. He's this fella who's created this little traveling
it's like a pod that goes on the back of a bike for you to sleep in,
like a bike's caravan. So it's this tiny little
like
pod
that surely
on the back
exists
of your bicycle.
Now that's got to be on Kickstarter.
It must be. So he's doing this test run of it, and he strikes up a friendship with Chris, which then Tina gets obviously very upset about, and eventually he gets pushed down a cliff in his little mini caravan. And it's really sad because he's done nothing but be nice and try and strike up a friendship with these people.
And he finds himself caught between them as they're arguing about their relationship as well.
Yeah.
And so he's almost caught in the crossfire of that, which is still, I think, more the point of the film than the murders is actually their relationship. And that's why, as you say, as a horror film with a romantic story attached, it really works.
Yeah, definitely. Because it is all about them as a couple. And if you look at the sort of story arc of them, it does almost follow the typical movie trajectory, doesn't it? Of like things start off and there's a bit of friction, but then things get really good. Then things suddenly get very bad and then they get good again.
Yeah.
So it kind of does follow that structure, which is neat. And I think it's a very clever subversion of the kind of film that they're making here. Where yes, it's kind of an offbeat romantic comedy, but also they murder people along the way.
Yeah, but the murders fit into their relationship in a really interesting way as well. And every time one happens, it punctuates a moment in their relationship and their development as characters who are being intimate with each other. So that really works well.
Yeah, it they all fit in incredibly well into that structure, which is great. And I just kind of. I think this is nearly a perfect movie for what they set out to do. And, you know, people might not like it as much as I do, but that's more to do with the types of movies people like rather than the film itself. And for what they wanted to do, I don't think they could have done it any better than they have done here.
No, absolutely not. No, it absolutely does what it set out to do, for sure.
So,
and it is ambitious in a way. To try and tell that story, to try and make it so British and about caravanning and, you know, and dogs and cups of tea and all that stuff that seem kind of, you know, kind of low key and a bit drab, but that's kind of, that's ambitious in a way to try and attach a romantic story and a kind of a murder element to that as well. There's an ambition there as well, even if it's not the same as how big can we make Gary Oldman's hair when he's Dracula?
Yeah. Given the budget as well, so this movie only cost a little bit over £1 million to make.
Wow.
And they do an incredible job with it. And it's a beautifully shot movie. And I think Ben Wheatley has shown time and time again that he's brilliant at that kind of stuff. So he did High Rise, the adaptation of the J.G. Ballard book.
Oh, right, yeah.
Which is a beautiful movie. It's a really good adaptation of the novel as well, because the novel is bizarre and incomprehensible at times, and the movie also is bizarre and incomprehensible, but it captures the kind of attitude perfectly.
Right. That's what I'd like to see. I've never read the book, but I've always meant to. Obviously, J.G. Ballard's really good.
Yeah, I love Ballard's work. He does a great job of adapting it. But interestingly enough, his next movie is going to be an adaptation of Rebecca.
Yes, which did see that. Yeah,
which is one of my favourite novels. And it's got Armie Hammer and Lily James as the two leads, which is. I mean, it's a terrible name. I'm sorry, Armie.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with him as a person, but that is just a hilarious name.
And I really like him as an actor as well. I think he's very good. With Keely Hawes as well and Kristin Scott Thomas. It's
probably best known for her performance in Under the Cherry Moon, of course.
Yeah, of course, that classic. But yeah, so I'm very excited to see that because it's a book I love from a director I love with a cast I really enjoy as well. And then he's also doing the next Tomb Raider movie.
Oh, cool. Why not?
Which is cool. Written by Amy Jump, who he works with all the time, who's also his wife.
Oh, yes. She said she worked on this film as well, Sightseers.
Yes, yeah. So she wrote Kill List. She wrote High Rise, adaptation. Cool. And also wrote Free Fire, which is another one of his great movies that came out a couple of years ago.
Cool. I know this film was produced by Naira Park as well, who's worked on pretty much all of Edgar Wright's stuff. And obviously when a director and a producer work together that much, you realize that actually so much of the aesthetic and the tone of the films that is credited to the director actually is from the producer as well.
Yes, yeah. And I think Edgar Wright was an executive producer on Sightseers too.
Oh, right. So it does have a touch of his kind of tone, doesn't it? A certain je ne sais quoi.
And so it's cool. I really like this film, and I think they did a great job with what they had to work with.
Yeah, for sure. And as you say, it is beautiful. It there are a number of very, very good shots of the British countryside, ending up in the Ribble Valley, which is obviously a hilarious name.
Definitely.
But it makes it all look very, very nice. I mean, I feel like actually if it wasn't for all the darkness that is there, it would actually be a very nice holiday to go on.
Because it does capture the feel of those kind of holidays as well. And I really love those kind of British countryside holidays where you go to those kind of banal destinations and there's something magical about them.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, going to the like old ship museums down in Cornwall.
Yeah, Barometer World
and yeah, going to the Graphite Museum and things like that. There's something special about those kind of things, and something inherently British about them as well.
Barometer World is real, by the way.
Is it really?
Just make that up. It's in
where
Devon.
Is Barometer World?
Merton.
See, I
Devon.
Wasted all my time.
I don't think it's that far from Exeter. We should have gone. I don't know why I never took you.
I was going to say I wasted all of my time down in Devon.
What were we doing? Studying and playing video games.
Going to the Otter Sanctuary or going to the Buckfast Abbey to see monks make hideous drinks that turn Scottish people insane.
Yeah, Buckfast Abbey is a magical place.
It really is. Did you visit Buckfast Abbey when you were down
there?
Yeah,
I did, yeah. It was nice. It's really nice, though.
It really is.
Really chill. But yeah, Buckfast wine. That's not a good drink.
Buckfast tonic wine made by monks turns Scottish people mad. is one of the strangest quirks of British culture, I think, is how this drink from Devon has caused such antisocial behaviour on the other side of the nation.
And you know what? Brexit's not going to affect that. It's something that's made in England, shipped to Scotland. That's where it ends.
Buckfast is a perfect metaphor for the treatment of Scotland by the English as a whole, really, isn't it?
Have something that'll make you go insane, but please stay in our union.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to ruin your lives, but don't you dare blame us for it.
Yeah.
It's your fault. yeah. So I can't remember how we got onto Buckfast Sonic Wine, but...
Me neither. It's not shown anywhere in Sightseers, but you wouldn't be surprised, would you?
No. But it's a surprisingly sweet movie at times as well.
You can get a personalised bottle of Buckfast wine with your face on it. Do you want me to get you that for Christmas?
Can you get non-alcoholic Buckfast?
You probably can.
If you can get non-alcoholic Buckfast, that's what I want for Christmas.
All right.
I'd love it.
Consider it done. Or I could just get the bottle done, take out the wine and then pour something else in it.
Yeah, put some Ribena in it.
Yep.
Oh no, Vimto. Vimto is definitely
Vimto is superior.
I wouldn't say superior, but in terms of the things that will make you go insane through sheer sugar consumption, Vimto is going to get the job done when Ribena won't.
Yep. Sure, it'll never let you down.
And so sightseers, I'm aware that we're running up on time soon, but I just wanted to say about how much I love the ending of this film, because A, it uses one of my favorite songs ever, The Power of Love by Frankie Goes to Hollywood, which I adore. And if you have bad words to say about that song, get out. It's a classic. One of the most underappreciated bands of the 80s.
Did you like when it was done on that John Lewis advert a few years ago?
Oh, I loved it. I love sad piano covers of great songs. Hey, let's take out all the layering and what makes this song magical and replace it with a piano. That'll make it good.
And someone singing in a really mannered way. There. Which song will it be this year? We should take bets.
It's going to be...
Have they done Take On Me? It's going to be Take On Me.
Take On Me is a really good shout. Yeah. Or something from the 90s?
Yeah, I guess maybe. Far enough along now. It's going to be If You Want to Be My Lover by the Spice Girls, Wannabe, but sung really slow by Adele.
I could see it being a Spice Girls song, actually. But yeah. What other ones would fit? Maybe Goodbye.
To Become One.
Or To Become One. Yeah, To Become One might be a good one.
I mean, that's already a ballad, but you could still strip it back further.
Yeah, you could slow it down, make it a piano song. That might be it.
I need Christmas like I never needed it before.
Gonna give presents to my baby.
Exactly, yeah. Easy.
It's gonna work.
Someone should be paying us for this shit.
Yeah, hey, John Lewis.
Hey, John Lewis, if you're listening. I know, John, that you listen all the time.
Yeah, as do you, Lewis.
Yeah. Lewis doesn't like it as much.
No, he doesn't.
John makes him do it.
Yeah. Yeah, hire us. We'll do your advert songs.
Yeah.
But it's a really powerful ending, and it's quite unexpected as well. I won't go into spoilers, I guess, because it is a big old spoiler. But
well, we always have spoiler warning at the beginning of the podcast. So
we do, but this is a particularly big spoiler. I think ruining the last 5 seconds of a movie.
Yeah.
Is that's a bad move.
It's really unexpected and just great.
Yeah, it's good.
But it's really unexpected, but still perfect in what it does for both their relationship and for the grim elements of it as well.
Yes, yeah. It fits in incredibly well, and it ties up in the whole character relationship, and not just theirs, but the entire piece of characters. So her mother, for instance, and her the deceptions that she's shown to have throughout the movie as well, and that horrible kind of symbiotic relationship. It all ties together perfectly into that sort of end scene. It's great. It's really good.
It is. It's a very, very good film, and also a good one to watch for Halloween, but in a more lighthearted way, less of a kind of I want to watch something to be scared. Obviously, it is grisly, but yeah, it's very fun and enjoyable, and a very good mid-October watch, I'd say.
Yeah, I agree. It's if you don't feel like you can watch a straight-on horror movie during the Halloween
month, Gary Oldman talking like this is too much for you,
then watch something a little bit more low-key but equally as captivating.
Yeah, and it's a British thing, and a thing that is distinctly British that is good, and those are in short supply.
Yeah, it's basically that and black pudding.
Yeah. Pretty much. How do you feel about white pudding?
White pudding's okay, but
I like it, but
it's not as good as black pudding. Black pudding is the king.
Yeah, for sure. I really want some black pudding now.
I could go for that or a bit of square sausage. Have you ever had square sausage?
Yeah.
I mean, that is some good shit. If we're talking great things from Scotland,
yeah,
then you got to go for that. Anyway, right, so I have a little bit of extra chat to do, so shall we rate this movie?
Yes. Do you have trivia, or have we covered all the points?
I think we've pretty much covered all the trivia. You know that they kind of wrote it between them, the two leads, which is cool, and that probably helps explain why it all feels so natural.
Yeah.
And yeah, that it's sort of filmed all around these kind of local tourist attractions. So like the tram lines,
yeah, I love
the caverns and everything like that.
Which, but again, yes, lends itself well to the very British tone of it.
Yes, exactly. It's genuine. It's genuine, and that's what makes it work so well. So how are we going to rank this? How many giant pencils did you buy? Does that work yeah. for you?
Yeah, or how many murders did you do on your caravan trip?
Yeah, or how many caravan murders did you do whilst holding a giant pencil?
I did 16. 16 with my big pencil.
And I also did 16. I'm surprised this didn't make the news, because that is a lot of murders.
Very good.
Right, so I have some news, Paddy.
Some news?
Yeah, I saw...
You found a film that you want us to watch.
Well, I did. We're going to share that when Halloween month's over, because it's going to be a doozy.
I'm excited.
Shout out to Alicia for bringing it to our attention. It looks awesome. I saw a film, Paddy.
It's a film
that you know of. It's a film called Joker.
Oh yes, yeah. How was it? I've heard generally good things, but still some kind of mixed reports out there. So yeah,
it is a real mixed bag, where it is not the greatest movie ever made. And in fact, I wouldn't even say, I know lots of people have been talking about Joaquin Phoenix's performance as being Oscar worthy. I wouldn't necessarily say it is, although it is good because he's a good actor. But I came out of it very surprised, because it has this amazing anti-capitalist bent to it, which I was expecting. Yeah. So a lot of the time in comic book movies, they can take on this theme of an enemy representing something. So, you know, it could be colonialism or evil billionaires or what have you. But it's always down to the individual. So this is a bad guy who did this. But what Joker does, and that I've not seen it done in a superhero movie, even ones that are far out, like Super, which really does talk about it in more of a societal manner. The villain in Joker is the way that capitalism destroys the lives of underprivileged people.
Oh, wow.
Which is amazing. And it's such a surprise to do. And it's not perfect in any way, you know. So there's still issues with it. The way that it represents mental illness is not particularly good.
Oh, really?
They nearly get there and then they shit all over the floor when they're really close to doing it well.
Oh, that's really disappointing.
Which is a shame, but, you know, I think if they tried to do it in a less realistic manner, they maybe would have gotten away with it, but because they tried to make it as realistic as possible, there's only so far you can push things without it becoming incorrect, I suppose. Not politically incorrect, but just like it's not true. And I think that you can only bend the truth so far with things like mental illness representation. And there's other issues as well. Like sometimes it's a bit too edgy for its own good. It feels a bit too, I'm a cool 13-year-old boy and I'm wearing my United Snakes of America t-shirt.
Joker's into Amen.
Amen. Sometimes it feels a little bit too edgy for its own good. And I think sometimes it plays around a little bit too much with the, is he the hero or a villain? Whereas I think the best movies that do this kind of thing, like Fight Club, for instance, is a perfect example of a film that does this incredibly well, or Nightcrawler starring Jake Gyllenhaal. If anyone listening to this liked Joker, go and see Nightcrawler, because you're going to love it. Which is about a character played by Jake Gyllenhaal who goes to scenes of crimes and car accidents and gets that horrible footage you see on cable news networks, where it's really intrusive and horrible, where you go into the house or you do a zoom in on the car accident, that kind of stuff. And it's all about his rise to fame and rise in power within local news as this horrible cameraman, effectively. It's a brilliant movie. And so what Joker does is it's effectively Taxi Driver or King of Comedy, but the Joker from Batman.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of comparisons to The King of Comedy, which is a fantastic film. So from that point of view, I actually really want to see it.
And so it is good. I'd recommend people go and watch it, but it is, I don't know, it's very rarely just good. It's always either brilliant or shit. And so I can understand why it's been divisive, and a lot of the reviews have either been this is the greatest film ever or this is terrible. But I think a lot of people's I don't want to invalidate people's complaints about it, but I think a lot of the sort of more critical takes on it about it being a dangerous film are quite unfounded.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't think it's aiming to do that as much as the press tried to amp it up to be this big controversial movie. I think actually it's a lot more subtle and a lot more interesting than that, which is good.
Cool. That actually sounds really good.
It's nice to see a superhero movie where billionaires are not your friends.
Yes.
Which is really refreshing. And I love the fact that this movie kind of takes that angle with the Batman universe, where forever there's been these benevolent millionaires. Whereas in reality, you know, these people do not give a shit about people like the Joker, who come from low income families, who have mental health issues, and who, you know, American society is quite happy to let die in the quiet somewhere without anybody caring about them. So I really love that there has been this superhero movie that shone a light on that, in a way that they very rarely do.
That's great.
So yeah, I enjoyed it. I wouldn't say it's great, but it's good. I liked it. I liked it more than I thought I was going to.
Well, that does sound very interesting. I definitely want to see it now. I ever will until it comes to the Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, you might hate it. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
You might think, what is this pretentious red pill bullshit?
But remember, I do really like Joaquin Phoenix, so hopefully he can save it for me.
And it's got an amazing end. I really love the end with a little... that it's kind of where it shits the bed from a mental health representation perspective, but overall thematically, it's super good. I liked it. Listeners, did you like Joker? If you didn't, come yell at me on the internet. If you did,
open invitation to come yell at Rob on the internet.
Yeah, and if you did and you liked it more than me and you think I'm being a soy boy beta cuck, then come and yell at me on the internet as well. I'm looking forward to your takes.
Yep. You are definitely all of those things.
I am definitely a soy, a boy, a beta, and a cuck.
In that order.
In that, it's like I'm a bitch, I'm a lover song.
Yeah.
I'm a soy, I'm a boy.
I'm a, what was that? A cuck.
Yeah.
I'm a beater, I'm a... Yeah, it just cuts off.
It just cuts off, yeah.
Yeah. Easy one for karaoke.
Indeed. So have we got anything else you want to share, Paddy? Anything from your end? Exciting updates? It.
No, I haven't really seen anything because I've just been looking after baby and dog. I've been to Frankfurt to go to the Frankfurt Book Fair and I'm back. So yeah, here we are. I took only one photo in Frankfurt, which was a picture of a man in lederhosen that was up in a frame on the wall in the airport. I've been there so many times now that there's nothing else to see.
It sounds like that's the most important photo to take, though, to be fair.
But I did have bratwurst for lunch and dinner yesterday.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I'm very jealous of your bratwurst.
Yeah, it was a currywurst for lunch.
Oh, mate.
And then I had a platter of sausages at the airport.
Oh, that's so good.
All, you know, all the different types from all the different cities. Nuremberg's, Frankfurters, obviously. Yeah, it was great.
I'm super jealous
good
of
times.
Your sausage platter.
So what are we watching next?
So we are going to end our Halloween month with a beautiful shit piece. It's a film I've not seen in a very long time, but I remember being super entertaining. So we're going to be watching The Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, yes. I think I remember seeing this when it came out, actually.
Yeah, not the original, not the classic. We're going to be watching the 2004 musical adaptation. This movie is something else. So I'm really looking forward to watching it again.
Sorry, I should save it for next week, really, shouldn't I?
That's the problem, though. It's such a good score.
Yeah, it's very good.
You can't not.
I do have a soft spot for the musical itself, the Lloyd Webber musical, even though it's ridiculous.
Yeah, so do I. It's a really ambitious, dumb, beautiful baby.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to talking about that.
Hell yeah, so am I. It's going to be great.
Good choice. Good choice. Right. Well, in that case, all that's left to say is thank you very much for tuning in. So sorry we weren't with you last week, but we've hopefully been back with a bang this week and done two films. So yeah, there we are. Halloween month is almost over, it seems. Strange. Shame.
I know. I hate it.
I hope you're all having a good old spooky month. I need to think of a Halloween name for Twitter.
Paddy Boneston.
That's a bit rubbish. If you can think of one, let me know. I'm on Twitter at Paddy Johnston. We are on Twitter at Big Boys Don't Pod. Oh yeah, we should probably come up with the big podcast as well.
Paddy Tombstone.
I've done that before, but yeah, I could bring that back. It was very genuinely actually quite hard to think of something, so I might have to just do that before. Have you done Robert Goulden before?
I don't think I've done Robert Goulden. I did Robot Gordon, and what was the other one I did? I've only done it a couple of years, but Robert Goulden is the best I've done so far.
That is very good. I know you put it on like the 1st of October.
Mate, I changed my picture to my spooky picture, and I put on my name because Halloween month, it is a month. It's not just a day. Get over it, people.
I have not been as good, but I will get there.
If we can celebrate Christmas for fucking 3 months of the year, you bastards.
It's Christmas! I'm up for that. I love Christmas. You know,
as do I.
I don't want to talk too much about what we're going to do at Christmas, but, you know, we've basically decided already because Netflix have released an incredible slate of this film is coming out, and I'm very excited. Most notably, of course, Christmas Prince 3, The Royal Baby.
Oh, yeah, that's a given, but we've got two others already lined up, haven't we? So it just leaves us with one slot to fill for that month.
Yeah.
They're all going to be absolute corkers, though.
Yep, I'm really excited. So yeah, after this, it's Christmas.
It is. Well, no, you've got Bonfire Night. It goes Halloween, then a few days later you've got Bonfire Night, and then immediately it's Christmas mode.
Is there a romantic Guy Fawkes film?
Oh God, I really hope someone's done a romantic Guy Fawkes movie.
Let's find that out before next time so we can watch it if we have to.
Our boy was in a Guy Fawkes film, wasn't he?
Cary Elwes.
No, our shorter, hairier boy, Kit Harington. Hairy always. Kit Harington was in a TV series about Guy Fawkes, wasn't he? Because he's related to someone who was involved in the plot because he's a big posh boy.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was called Gunpowder.
Yeah, good title.
Yeah, I don't think that it's romantic, unfortunately. But I heard it was good.
Cool. Well, something to look into.
Yes. But yeah, unfortunately, there's no rom-com about Guy Fawkes that I know of.
Shame. Guess we'll just have to make it ourselves, which is what we do.
That'll be our next thing. Who would star in it? Who would you have?
Well, Cary Elwes, obviously.
Cary Elwes.
You can make it like a one-man show. An Elwes vehicle.
He just plays everybody.
Yeah.
what would we call it though? That's the question.
Fawkes
you. That's what we're calling it. It's a rambunctious one man comedy show with
Guy Fawkes.
Guy Fawkes. Okay, that's amazing. Yeah, we're making this.
Yeah, this is happening. Need nominations for people who play Guy Fawkes and all the Parliament guys. The fat cats in Parliament who he tried to blow up. We need all of them sorted.
Yeah, get on it. Right, yep. Okay.
Terry Crews can be in it somewhere, obviously.
Somewhere, yeah. Yep. He'll have a role somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, good times. All right, well, we'll be back next week to talk about The Phantom of the Opera. Thanks, as ever, for tuning in. We really appreciate it, and we hope you're having a great Halloween month. And do get in touch with us, as we say, on Twitter. Help us with our Halloween names at Big Boys Don't Pod, at Robert_Gordon_. Is that right?
That is indeed.
At Paddy Johnston. Easy.
Yeah, get in touch. What's your spooky name? If you could marry Guy Fawkes, would you marry him? I wouldn't. He's been dead a very long time.
Yeah. Can you get your hair into the shape of a heart?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Would you wear a big muscle suit made of muscle and armor
for love?
For love. All right. All right. Okay. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Whoa.
Yeah, I didn't talk enough about Gary Oldman's accent.
I want to suck your blood. They're all gonna be alone.